I tell you what, I'm glad to see you. We've had a good time all weekend long. I've eaten too much. But my dear wife knows how to put me on restrictions when I get home. And so whatever pounds have come on will come off. And Brother Russ is exactly right. We've had a bunch of years of sharing ministry and doing things together with Faith Music and now with Faith Radio, and I'm privileged to be on the station here 5 days a week, and grateful for that. And at the same time, we've done a lot of projects together. You all have helped us with some of our musical projects and other things, and the trio sings for us at the National Conference and so on and so forth. I mean, we're just together, and we're working together and glad to do so. And thankful that all that the Lord used Brother Gail Rush to get started is just continuing to build and grow and to build on the legacy that he handed off to Brother Stephen Rush and all of you pulling together. Everybody helps if they will, you know. Just everybody finding a spot, plugging in, and doing something. That makes all the difference. It makes the kind of difference that we really need. Now, you're growing. And yet, Evansville is a big old city. There's lots of people to reach, you know. And I know when I was pastors, some of our folks, they'd get a little antsy about that. They'd say, well, we're getting so many people. And I'd say, yes, that's what we're about. That's what we're about. That's what we're supposed to be doing. And so we don't, you know, we just kind of scoot over and let somebody else have our seat when the time comes that we need to do that. And keep making the adjustments that we need to make to reach every possible person that we can. And that's what it's all about. Psalm 78. I'm going to read several verses here in this passage tonight and give you some things that the Lord's kind of put on my heart to give you. And then I'll get out of the way here in a couple of hours and let Brother Joe Arthur have plenty of time. I'm glad he's here. He and I get together and preach together a lot, and he's a dear friend, and thankful to the Lord that he's here and glad that he's able to be here after a time with some health issues. And so we're grateful that he's here, and he'll be preaching in just a little bit. And I will trim it down. You all know me, I don't preach 2 hours. But anyway, at least not in the same service. Anyway, Psalm 78. I'm having a good time. I hope you all are. Psalm 78. And I begin reading, let's start in verse number 2. I will open my mouth in a parable. I will utter dark sayings of old, which we have heard and known and our fathers have told us. We will not hide them from their children, showing to the generation to come the praises of the Lord and his strength and his wonderful works that he hath done. For he established a testimony in Jacob, and appointed a law in Israel, which he commanded our fathers, that they should make them known to their children, that the generation to come might know them, even the children which should be born, who should arise and declare them to their children, that they might set their hope in God and not forget the works of God, but keep his commandments, and might not be as their fathers, a stubborn and rebellious generation, a generation that set not their heart aright and whose spirit was not steadfast with God. The children of Ephraim, being armed and carrying bows, turned back in the day of battle. They kept not the covenant of God and refused to walk in his law and forgot his works and his wonders that he had shown them. Now, if you'll drop down, it's a long chapter and I'll not read all of it. Drop down to verse 17. Verse 12. Let me add verse 12 to what I just read. Marvelous things did he in the sight of their fathers. I want to get that in. Verse 17, and they sinned yet more against him by provoking the Most High in the wilderness, and they tempted God in their heart, asking for their lust. Yea, they spake against God. They said, can God furnish a table in the wilderness? Now, a few observations off of what we've just read. Apparently, a past generation had received some revelation. They had gotten some good information that God provided for them. That's why that he said, I'm going to open my mouth and tell you some of what he calls the dark sayings of old. Dark, I think, not because they're evil, but dark because not everybody's got hold of them. It's like some of this is almost in a secretive, closeted situation. And he says, I'm going to tell you some of these things that our fathers got way back when. So somewhere back there, a past generation did receive revelation. Now, second observation, the present generation can benefit from the history of the past generations. Verse number 4, we will not hide them, talking about those sayings of old, we will not hide them from their children. Verse number 6 then says that the generation to come might know them, even the children which should be born, who should arise and declare them to their children. So we're looking in the past to pick up the things that'll help the present, and then for that, whatever generations are yet to come. So the present generation and the future generations can benefit from the history. An old worn-out cliche says the only thing we learn from history is that we don't learn anything from history. Well, that's if that's true, that's a mistake. That's not a good plan at all. Now, third observation. The Lord's greatness was still in evidence even when the people did wrong. Key point here. The Lord's greatness was still in evidence when the people did wrong. Look at verse 8. Might not be as their fathers, a stubborn and rebellious generation, a generation that set not their heart aright and whose spirit was not steadfast with God. Verse 12 says, they sin yet more against him by provoking the Most High in the wilderness, and they tempted God in their heart by asking meat for their lust. So the fact is, a lot of the people turned a blind eye and a deaf ear to the claims of God upon their life. And yet, the Lord was still in place. He was still the Lord God. His word was still true. Everything was still right that he said was right and wrong that he said was wrong. You know, sometimes I've noticed in our generation, some folks act like, well, since we get here, we can redefine things. We can tell you now, you know, what our grandfather said was wrong. It really isn't wrong because we say it's not wrong. Now, that is just, well, I want to use a great theological term for that. That's a lot of hogwash. That's hillbilly theology right there. But anyway, or river bottom for me down in West Kentucky. But anyway, the Lord's greatness, no matter what the people do, I mean, whether the flags are flying high or whether they're being dragged through the mud, the Lord's greatness is still in place. Observation number 4. The Lord does not evolve from one generation to the next. The Lord doesn't. Verse 5, he established a testimony in Jacob and appointed a law in Israel, which he commanded our fathers that they should make known to their children. So whatever generation it is, the Lord is not an evolver. He does not shift gears just to accommodate whatever is in vogue. He doesn't read the Gallup polls, for example. If he does, he doesn't pay any attention to them. Now, the Lord doesn't change from one generation to the next. Observation number 5. The new generations often copy and repeat the tragedies of the past. Not all the time, but often that's true. Notice verse 9. The children of Ephraim being armed and carrying bows. You say, what does that mean? It means they got a good education. It means they, in our terms, they got to go to the university. They came out carrying a degree. I mean, these are sharp young people. They're well-tutored. They're well-trained. And they're all prepared for dealing with the adversaries of God and the adversaries of their nation. And they had everything to their advantage. But when the day of the battle came, they tucked tail and run. They ducked out. Cowardly, they turned back in the day of battle. You say, what was their problem? Their problem was they kept not the covenant of God. They refused to walk in his way, forgot his works and his wonders that he had shown unto them. So they had all kinds of things they could see and observe that had happened 10 years back, 20 years back, 30 years back, seeing how God had worked. That 12th verse said, marvelous things did he in the sight of their fathers. And you know, we sometimes are prone to say ladies talk a lot. Well, guys talk a lot too. And fathers are prone to talk to their children. And what do? They talk about all of these exploits of the past. You know, I mean, every little thing that any one of us ever did. When our kids are born, I mean, you bet. I mean, we hope somebody else will talk about it, but if we don't, we're going to tell our kids about some of the home runs we hit. Amen. Now, but the generation, the new generations, they often say, oh, I know, they took this philosophy, but now we'll improve on it. We'll get by. I mean, they messed it up, but we'll manage. And it's a mistake, of course. Now, observation number 6, I guess it is. You get down to verse 19. And this crowd that has turned their back on God, this crowd that has refused to listen to their elders and has not followed the example of the people who walked with God and who've let themselves lean with the wrong crowd. The next thing you know, verse 19 says, oh, they begin to talk against God. Now, if you can imagine, anybody, whatever degree of intelligence they have, anybody who would cry out against the Lord God of heaven and speak against God, they're revealing a degree of ignorance and arrogance in so doing. But it says, yea, they spake against God, and here's what they said. They said, can God furnish a table in the wilderness? They said, we're out here in the middle of nowhere. And there's not a McDonald's in every corner, and there's no Walmart with every kind of an imaginable thing on the shelves. So what are we going to do? Do you think God can handle this? Well, the answer to that question is yes. You say, what do you mean, yes? I'm just telling you, look back through the years. God did, and he can, and he will. Now, when you think about the circumstances that Israel had been through, there was that period in time when they were in slavery in Egypt. They were under the duress of slavery and the evil taskmasters, and they were being treated less than human. And yet there came a day when God said to Moses, you're the guy, we're going to get you all out of here. And you're going to have to lead them out. And you know, Moses wasn't too sure that he was the guy. It was like, you know, I can't talk real good. The Lord said, don't worry about it. I'll take care of it. You got a brother. He talks real well. I read through all through there. Moses didn't use Aaron a whole lot. You say, what happened? He found out that God could do for him, with him, through him, what he could never do himself. So can God? Yes, he proved that to Moses. He proved that to Israel when they were in slavery. And then here they are marching out of Egypt, headed for the promised land. They're out there in that wilderness area, a place that is beset with snares and predators and dangers of all kind. And this crowd is saying, can God furnish a table out here in the wilderness? Well, God did, and he can, and he will. There'll be times when you will find yourself in desert circumstances. You'll find yourself with month left over and money gone. You'll find yourself in the ER. You'll find yourself weeping your eyes out because of the loss of a loved one. Some other desert type experience. And you ask yourself the question, can I get through this? Can God help me through this? Well, I want you to know, yes, God can, because God did and God will. Whatever day, whatever desert we're in the days ahead, God will see us yet through. I get letters from prisoners all over the country. We put the sword of the Lord into hundreds of prisons and jails, every issue of it. And I get a stack of prison mail every single day that the mail runs. And with the help of our people there in the office, we answer every single one of them. And we always have. I have more friends in prison than you can imagine. And very honestly, we treat every one of them as though they're somebody. They are somebody's son or daughter. And they've committed all kinds of crimes and atrocities, and here's something I hear from them a lot. Is there any way out for me? And sometimes I have to tell them, you know, you're not going to get out until they say you can get out. But I'm telling you, that pit that you're in, that depression that you're in, state of philosophy that you've embraced in, there is a way out of that. God can do that. God can help you. And sometimes I preface my admonitions to those guys and gals by saying, now, you and I have never met, but for just a little bit, I'm going to be your daddy. I say that to them. And I let them know that my strong words, my firm words, are loving words. They're not intended to be in any way harsh, but sometimes you just have to spell it out. And I want them to know, no matter how far down they are, no matter how many years they have left in the calaboose, no matter how bad it is in there, and in some of those places, many of those places, it is pretty bad. But I let them know that God can see them through, even in the pen. Whenever you find yourself persecuted, shut down, locked out, pushed around, mistreated, government on your back, you find yourself betrayed by a family friend or a family member, you find yourself, somebody has robbed you blind, how do I make it? How do I get through all of that? I'm telling you, there is a God in heaven who is the Almighty, and what he did for Moses and Elijah and David and Jeremiah and Isaiah, he can do now, and he will do whatever day in the future you may need him. God can. God did. And God will. When the day is long and the shadows deep, God can. And God will. Now this crowd, they were in trouble because of carnality that kept popping up. Succeeding generations did not grab hold of the good things as they needed to. There were times when things got totally crazy. Roof caved in. Things didn't work out like they were supposed to. Verse 35 in that chapter says, oh, they remembered that God was their rock and the high God their redeemer. Nevertheless, they did flatter him with their mouth, and they lied unto him with their tongues, for their heart was not right with him, neither were they steadfast in his covenant. They knew, but they wouldn't do. They knew who God was. They knew what God was about. They knew what he could do for them, and yet they it was like they tried to butter God up. You know, Jesus talked about folks who give lip service. You know, oh, you're what you say, I hear. But your heart, Jesus said, is far from me. Now, sometimes we get into this kind of a scenario. I mean, hypocrisy was the fare for many of these folks. Half-hearted faith was all they could give. And even in the wilderness and in the desert and with God so available to them, still they floundered, they flailed away and faltered. In the midst of it all. You say, well, I guess God just sick and tired of them. Well, verse 38 says, but he. But he. I mean, they're saying, we're out here in the middle of nowhere. I mean, there's not a crop to be harvested. There's no water to be drawn. Can God furnish our table? Can he feed my babies? Can he put breakfast on the table? Can he feed me at noontime? Can he feed me at night? Can God furnish a table in this circumstance that we're in? And here's the story. In spite of their failures, God did not fail. But he, being full of compassion, and he is, forgave their iniquity and destroyed them not. Yea, many a time turned he his anger away and did not stir up all his wrath. For he remembered that they were but flesh, a wind that passeth away and cometh not again. God knows our humanness. He knows our frailties. He knows our faults. He knows when we've crashed and burned. God knows all about that. And when others cannot help us, what do we do? Well, look at verse 52. But he made his own people to go forth like sheep and guided them in the wilderness like a flock, and he led them on safely so that they feared not. God didn't give up on them just because they were less than what they needed to be. He led them, guided them through the wilderness like a flock. Look at verse 72. So he fed them according to the integrity of his heart and guided them by the skillfulness of his hands. Think of it, friends. Here we are. I mean, I've said it. We've all said it. Our nation has so many things hanging loose, so many things going awry. And we ask ourselves, can God? And the question needs a yes answer. God did. God can and God will. He will see us through. He will get us through the desert. He will get us to the promised land. In spite of the hurts and the heartaches, it's not easy when you've got a broken family. You say, well, I don't know what God can do for me. I'm just telling you, whatever brokenness you have, there's a God who can furnish your table for you. Whatever your wilderness, God can furnish your table for you. You say, I'm just a bitter, angry person. Well, if you get with the God of heaven, he can furnish a table that'll feed you some sweet things and erase and erode, get out that anger and that bitterness. You say, my life has been soaked in alcohol and driven by drugs. Oh, so many have been the times that we've seen folks with those kinds of problems come in their brokenness, some of them with 20 or 30 years of being soaked and soused in all of that stuff. And it's like, what can we do? What can we do? Listen, we introduce them to him who knows how to deal with that, who knows how to clean them up and get them where they need to be. I've seen folks with long rap sheets come to Christ and become clean. Mafia members get saved. Sexual deviants get cleaned up. Folks that have been crooks and thieves and dishonest liars all of their life. And yet there's a God who furnished a table when they sat down and ate at his table. It filled them fresh and full like they'd never been filled before. All of this, it's impossible with men, but it's altogether possible with God. I think about Old Testament Joseph, one of my favorite Old Testament characters. Betrayed, cast down into a pit, thrown into prison, betrayed time and again throughout that whole ordeal, and yet God elevated him. It says again and again, God was with him. God kept furnishing the table for Joseph. I think about Elijah. Outnumbered 850-1, all of those ecumenical false prophets on Jezebel's payroll, and yet he was only one man. You say, what's the deal here? God furnished his table. I think about Job, storm after storm after storm. I mean, you talk about somebody being hit and hurt and just filled with unbelievable heartache. And yet he lifted up his voice and he said, I know that my Redeemer liveth. He said, though he slay me, yet will I trust him. God furnished the table for him. Think about David, fouled out, messed up, sinned. And yet God raised him up. Daniel in the lion's den, three Hebrew children in the fiery furnace. John the Baptist and Paul and all of those others. Now, Can God? Well, God did. And I'm standing here tonight to tell you, God can. And not only that, but I'm going to look down through the middle of next week and next month and next year, and I'm going to tell you, God will. All the way. We're listening attentively in hopes for the sounding of the trumpet, And folks may mock at that, and they may say, oh, y'all been talking about that forever, and we have. But I'm telling you, what he promised, he will do. Every promise of the past, he has done what he said. Not one word of his good promise failed. And in the years of my life, God has been so good. So good. So good. And I'm convinced that on every rising sun, on every setting sun, every single day that we live and breathe, I'm convinced God can. Whatever the needs, whatever the burdens, whatever the heartaches, whatever the circumstances, whatever the challenges are, the God who is God can furnish our table in whatever wilderness we're in. Can God? God can. Did God? God did. Will God? God will. You see, if somebody needs to be saved, God can do it. He has done it, and he will keep doing it. Not only that, he gets you saved, he'll secure you so you don't get unsaved. You say, how's that? Well, that's what he's done. That's what he does. And that's what he will do. And not only that, after you've been saved a while, you'll be able to walk around over town and you'll be able to say, you know, God not only saves and secures, but he satisfies. I'm telling you, there's nothing like it. There's nothing like it. We sat down over there today. Brother Russ took us over to this famous barbecue place here in town, which we've been at before and he knows we like. We went over there and we sat down to the full. And I enjoyed that. It doesn't last long, but I enjoyed it. Enjoyed every bite of it. You know, you say, you like sitting down to a good table? I do, Miss Debbie. Miss Debbie set us down to a good table at lunch yesterday. We were at their home and had a good meal, enjoyed it. It didn't last. I mean, I was ready to eat again today. But all of these precious things like that that we enjoy when we gather around a table, enjoy sweet fellowship and eat good food, that's precious. It's good. But oh, listen, whenever you think about the needs and the burdens and the heartaches and realize what God can provide for you and what he will provide for you, think about it. It's not just on your shoulders. You have somebody who loves you more than you love yourself. And whatever your wilderness is, God will furnish a table and see you through. Dear Lord in heaven, thank you for being so good to us.